This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Think about some great Broadway shows. Stephen Sondheim's Sunday in the Park with George, David Mamet's Glengarry Glen Ross, August Wilson's The Piano Lesson. And what do they have in common? Well, not one of them started on Broadway. Instead, for decades now, some of the best, most innovative theater has developed outside the narrow commercial confines of Broadway's bright lights. They've been nurtured by what's come to be known as the American Regional Theater Movement. These theaters originated 30 of the past 32 Pulitzer Prize winners for drama, and today there are over 1,200 professional not-for-profit theaters in the United States. Together, they attract more than 30 million people to live performances every year, more than the number who attend professional football and professional basketball games combined. Regional theaters have become an important piece of America's cultural scene, but on the flip side, some worry that success and its ensuing expectations makes it harder for theaters to take the kinds of risks that got them where they are. Later in the program, we'll talk with the editor of the local paper for the latest on yesterday's mass murder on the Red Lake Chippewa Reservation in Minnesota, and we'll get further legal analysis as the Terry Schiavo case heads to a federal appeals court. But first, the American Regional Theater Movement. If you direct, produce, act in, or attend regional theater, give us a call. What's good? What's bad? What's changed? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is TOTN at NPR.org. NPR's Arts Desk is in the middle of an eight-part series on regional theater. Part four airs this Thursday on All Things Considered. NPR Arts Critic Bob Mondello joins us here in Studio 3A to give us an overview. Nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
It's great to be here again.
Back up a bit. Listening to your pieces on ATC, the American Regional Theater, I thought it always existed. This is a very much post-Second World War event.
Yes, it is. It was actually started in Dallas, Texas, when Margot Jones decided she wanted to create a theater in the round. And she did it in a room I went and visited this past week. Mm-hmm. And it's such a small room, you can't imagine she ever was allowed to cram 100 people into it. I mean, the fire marshals must have sort of looked the other way. But the idea was to make an intimate theater and a local theater and a professional theater that was different from Broadway, because Broadway is all about putting things up on a stage at something of a distance from the audience. It's a pretty spectacle, but it's not quite the same as these intimate things. And she created a whole new world. Other people got wind of her experimentation and started doing similar things. And Herbert Blau and out in San Francisco, and Zelda Fitchhandler here in Washington, D.C., and a lot of other people. And by the 1960s, there were like 20 of these theaters all around the country. She dreamed very small, which was kind of cute. Margot Jones, when she wrote her book, Theater in the Round, envisioned a world where there were 40 of these theaters scattered across the country. Today there are 1,200. You just can't imagine how big this has become. And it's, you know, it's a $1.4 billion industry. It's really enormous. And, you know, it's hard for people to understand what the difference is between this and community theater, for instance. Community theater is amateur theater, yeah, and it can be very good. I've seen some wonderful productions at them. But this is professional theater that is being done in all around the country. New York is a region, too, so sure, some of them are there. And the idea is to have a repertory company, kind of, to create a resident stage in a place, and to do work that is a little more adventurous than Broadway is willing to tackle. And the big change came really when Broadway in the 60s, the 50s and 60s, became something that was basically a musical factory. You know, the most of the shows that succeed on Broadway are these big spectacles. And whether it's Pajama Game or Les Mis, you know, they can be a lot of fun, but they're not necessarily, they're not the kind of thing that that people who want to see Shaw or Chekhov are going to take out to the hinterlands. And one of the biggest problems, actually, about the Broadway method of doing this is the only thing that was touring, you know, in the 1940s, serious plays were being done on Broadway, Death of a Salesman, all kinds of really, sure, great plays. But they weren't touring so much, because what was going out on tour were these musicals.
The crowd pleasers.
Exactly. And so out in the hinterlands, you weren't getting that. And so people in those towns decided they wanted something a little more substantial.
Now, so it's almost a total reversal. In a lot of major American cities, years ago, the only theater that it would arrive would be these touring companies out of Broadway. And of course, Broadway still sends national road
It
shows
certainly does.
out. But the product often goes the other way. It starts in these cities and ends up in New York.
That's right. What happened? I guess it actually started from the very beginning of the movement. Margo Jones sent things like "Inherit the Wind" to Broadway, but it didn't happen in quite the way that it did until 1968, when Arena Stage, the production of
Arena Stage here in
here
Washington,
in
D.C.
Washington, D.C., the production of "The Great White Hope" that they did with James Earl Jones and Jane Alexander, it transferred almost intact to Broadway. And so Broadway was now seeing what was out there at the regional theaters, as opposed to doing the same plays that had been done somewhere else. And you could, when Inherit the Wind went there without the same actors, you could kind of kid yourself that somehow it was not being done well out in the rest of the world, and that when Broadway did it, it got better. But this production was really pretty much the same production that played at Arena. Therefore, Broadway had to take notice, and Broadway after that went out and tried to find pieces that could play where they were used to seeing them. And it is a fact of life that the Pulitzer Committee tends to see things when they get to Broadway.
Right.
So it usually is something that's gotten there. But realistically, the all of these shows that have been generated in recent years, it's astonishing how many of them. And the Pulitzer winners aren't the only ones. I mean, there are lots of other plays that have come out of this that didn't win Pulitzer Prizes that are still kind of wonderful. I mean, Big River is a lovely musical. There's a lot of stuff. That's the other thing. Now the regional movement is the birthplace of a lot of musicals. And originally they were kind of reacting against it, but the old-fashioned musical is now sort of an endangered species. It's a perfectly reasonable thing for the regionals to tackle.
We're talking about regional theater with NPR's arts critic Bob Mondello. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. If you have questions about the growth, the development, or the challenges facing regional theater today, 800-989-8255. Email us, totn@npr.org. And as you mentioned, this is a big industry now. What are the budgets like for, is there a typical theater? I don't know, but.
Well, I'm delighted. During the course of this series, we've tried to make things both geographically dispersed, so that we're going to Tucson and to Dallas and to Perseverance Theater in Alaska. But we're also trying to get different levels of the movement. The Theater Communications Group, which is kind of an umbrella organization for all of these theaters, has budget categories that go from more than $10 million to less than $50,000, so that you're talking about all kinds of different groups. And we're actually hitting the Borderlands Theater that we visited in Tucson, has a budget of about $200,000, which is sort of substantial, but not really if you're doing a four-play season. That wouldn't pay, by the way, for the costumes of, a small play on Broadway.
Sure.
And then one of the other theaters we're dealing with is the Goodman Theater in Chicago, which is easily over $15 million in terms of its budget. So that you're dealing with all kinds of different. It depends on the neighborhood they're in and all
Yeah, Arena Stage getting a $100 million upgrade to its facility. I mean,
Yeah, isn't
that's
it?
astonishing.
Well, one of the facts of life about all of this is it's always easier to build a building than it is to get operating funds to keep it going. So raising the funds for a $100 million building is substantially easier than putting on a season.
Let's get some callers on the line, and we'll
Okay.
begin with Kate. Kate's joining us from Silicon Valley in California.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
I'm so glad that you're doing a show on regional theater. We have some fabulous regional theaters out here. Obviously, we have ACT, but there's also one called Theater Works that performs in Palo Alto and also Mountain View. That started as a small little company in 1970 with one guy writing an original script and his friends, and it's now grown to be, they have like more than 100,000 people that come through there to see their shows in a year, and they're sort of a great story of a small little theater company with a great idea wanted to write an original production.
And he turned to his girlfriend and said, I know, I've got a barn, let's put on a show.
Well, you know, that is really, in a sense, that is the story of the regional theater movement. A lot of, we've gotten letters from people who live in towns that only have 350 residents and yet have a regional theater in them. This is almost unimaginable, but this urge to get onto a stage and to do things is a powerful one. And I felt it when I was a kid. I really wanted, I didn't turn out to be any good, but I really wanted to be on stage. And the taking it to the next step, becoming a professional in the field is a much more complicated thing.
So Kate, what's the most interesting production you saw in this theater?
Oh, I've seen quite a few. I recently saw Shakespeare in Hollywood there.
Mm.
It was amazing. They had Broadway quality performers, and I know they sometimes go to New York to find talent, but they also use a lot of really talented people here in the Silicon Valley. And I think that the show was mind-blowing for me. I mean, I was blown away by the fact that there's this much talent in the Bay Area that people don't even know about.
Yeah, the level of performance at the regional theaters is very high, and it's something. I mean, obviously it'll vary, but as we've been going around looking at theaters, we were taking a chance because we wanted in this series for all the pieces to be up and running while we were talking about them, which meant that when we chose the theater, mm-hmm. they hadn't even cast the show in most cases. So we were taking a chance on what the quality level would be, and without exception, the shows have been astonishing. They really look, I mean, they're just, the quality is very high.
Kate, thanks very much for the call. Drive carefully.
Thank you so much. I will. Have a great day.
Okay, you too. We're talking today about the regional theaters that have grown up in this country since the past 60 years or
That's
so.
That's about right, 58 years.
And have come to play such an important part in not only regional cultural life, but American cultural life in the cities in which they've originated. And many other towns, the shows that they've originated have spread out and touched so many people over these years. If you'd like to join us, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. More after the break. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about how America's regional theaters have helped shape the country's cultural landscape with NPR's arts critic Bob Mondello. Do you think not-for-profit regional theaters have become too mainstream? Is riskier work and larger audiences, are those two terms mutually exclusive? Join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. And let's talk with Scott. Scott's calling from Nevada City, California.
Hello. Yes, I am actually an artistic director, a newly named artistic director of a small regional theater.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to mention the fact that the Foothill Theater Company, actually, in Nevada City, California, I wanted to mention the difficulty of maintaining the mission of the regional theaters, and that is that while we want to do exciting, new, different work that can't be seen on Broadway, our audience frequently demands standards and things that are guaranteed to sell, and we have to sell a certain amount of tickets to stay in business, and that's a difficult problem for us.
Yeah, I can imagine. Here in Washington, if you looked at what was being done 40 years ago, when Zelda Fitchhandler was just starting the arena stage, the kind of plays that were being done in town were very different from the plays that are being done today. And in fact, a lot of theaters have had to broaden their mission. We talked about them doing some musicals. Well, mm-hmm. they totally need to do that now. I mean, a lot of theaters have Christmas shows that are lighter, and they're playing to an audience. There are people who think this is pandering to an audience, and I think you can sort of make a case for that too. But it's all about educating an audience to like the more complicated stuff, and it takes a while for audiences in places where there have not been theaters before to understand all of this enough to understand that they're going to have a decent time at Shaw as well as at Neil Simon. And that's it's part of the job of the regional theater, I think, to educate the audience.
And Scott, how do you look at that?
Well, we see the need to do plays to bring people in and educate mm-hmm. them, just as you're mentioning. Mm-hmm. But we want to do new things. We're about to premiere a brand new play. And the challenge is to get enough people to come see that, that
right.
we can continue to fund it, that we can continue to get money enough to fulfill our mission, as it were. We do, I think, a good job of balancing those things, and I'm proud, very, very proud of the work we do, but it is always a tension there, and there's always a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Funding is a mess. I mean, it's just like the whole problem of not this whole notion of not-for-profit means that you plow everything that you make back into the theater.
And more.
And, yes, exactly. And you have to raise money to do it. You're always on a knife's edge. Mm-hmm. And you guys are heroic as far as I'm concerned. I can't imagine dealing with things that way. And, of course, that's not how it's been done in the past. You've reinvented the form in the last 50 years.
Yes,
well,
and it's you feel like you're doing important and good work, but there is always the concern about the next show.
Mm-hmm. Well, good luck, Scott.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Joining us now is somebody else who knows about that knife's edge. Ann Bogart is Artistic Director of the City Company, a nonprofit ensemble theater company based in New York City, and joins us now from our bureau in New York. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Good afternoon.
Hey.
And the problems of somebody like Scott, who just called in from Nevada City, California, those must seem familiar to you.
Well, actually, he really nailed it. And he's of course, as a new artistic director, facing the problems that many artistic directors are looking at. What happened, is, as far as I see it, because I'm a child of the regional theater, the first production I ever saw was one that determined that I would become a director was in a regional theater, and it was wild and explosive. It was Shakespeare. I didn't understand it, but it was what made me become a director, and to this day I can't live that down. But what happened is that a lot of these huge theaters, the large ones now, were created by, as Bob has pointed out, by really people with dreams who imagined something, and they imagined it into existence. And a lot of them were artists or producer artists who took tremendous risks to make it happen. Now, what happens is when a community gets comfortable with an institution and want it to continue, they hire, and the theater will hire, as they need to, administration that will sustain it. And the way that an administration thinks about art is very different than the way artists think about art. So as these creators moved on in their life or died or gave up their positions and younger people came in to take them over, what they inherited were actually substantial institutions with administrations and marketing departments and development departments and managers and managements who say, look at the bottom line. And so the intention behind the original institution starts to change, and that's where the difficulty lies right now.
Yeah, we have an email just to that point from Lila. I'm an actor in the Bay Area of San Francisco. However, I've lived in Chicago and New York City as well. I wholeheartedly believe regional theater and most theaters in general have avoided taking real risks for the past few years now. I can understand the theater community's fear of taking risks since there's a huge chance of really losing out financially. However, I think that to get audiences back, theater needs to take the next leap in evolution. It needs to learn how to be special again.
Yeah. I think absolutely that's true. One of the things about theater form is that it doesn't last for a long time. I think the Greek theater lasted for about 60 years. Elizabethan theater lasted for something less than that. Theater for Ibsen, the whole naturalistic impulse on the stage, lasted for under 60 years. It's difficult for theaters to stay in one place because something's always going to replace it. And the theater movement has been around 58 years. So if you accept the notion that three generations is about it, then we're reaching the end of what has been.
Well, Ann Bogart, let me ask you, interesting phrase in that email of getting the audience back. In a sense, the audience is there. It's just some of these theaters are victims of their own success.
Well, yes, and unfortunately, the success was happened 20 years ago, and so sometimes 30 years ago, and a lot of those subscribers are quite old now, and so the attempt that is necessary, but in not all cases happening, is to get new, younger folks into the theater. And that takes some risk-taking. And that's really what artistic directors of our times need to look at, is to take risks with new voices, really.
Here's an email from Sonny Lubner, I think I've got that right, in Fort Myers, Florida. I am a very proud board member of an outstanding regional theater in Fort Myers, Florida. Each time we've mounted a serious or audacious play, we've suffered losses. Our audience has told us at the box office that they want tried and true comedies or musicals. Any solution to this problem?
Go for it, Anne. You're the artistic director.
No, it's a good problem. In other words, we walk a paradox. All art does. In other words, there's no simple answer. And the obstacle that you face is one of habit. So any artists in this situation need to make their visions larger, more communicative, and contagious in a really great way that excite people. And you know, as Bob pointed out, the appetite for theater is ancient. The appetite to act. Everyone wants to act. Everybody does act in their life. So yeah, it's basic in our DNA. The issue is, if we play it too safe, and actually, and I'll use the word kowtow, although I guess that's originally Chinese, but if we kowtow to that point, to the safety net of the insurance of selling tickets based on play choice, you run into trouble. So that the paradox of our time is the necessity to take risks in a community that wants safety, and yet it's possible.
And how long has your company been around?
We are 13 years old right now, and we function both in the regional theater as well as in art centers, which is an alternative that you find right now to regional theaters right now. There are art centers all around the country that one could say are bringing in more diverse audiences by bringing in more diverse productions. The thing that's different, though, is that these art centers do not produce, meaning they don't pay for and nurture these artists into the creation of something. They bring in something that's made. Regional theaters will create from nothing, from scratch, an entire production. So
The reason I asked about your company is that it's been around for 13 years. You're reaching the point where what happens when you decide you don't want to do this anymore? Have you got a plan for ascendance to the throne? What happens?
I have absolutely no plan, but I have a big appetite for what I'm doing. And the City Company, which is the name of my company, is we feel like we're just starting to learn how to work together. So it feels in the distant future. But I spend most of my life training young people, so I would hope that there's some sort of contagion there. I hope that it happens organically.
City, by the way, S-I-T-I. Let's get another caller on the line. Sladen, is that right? Joins us
from
Portland?
Yes, Sladen.
Okay, go ahead. You're on the air.
I am the artistic director of a new professional company here in Portland, Oregon.
Am I guessing that artistic directors don't work much during the day?
You've got that right. I'm on my first job right now.
Go ahead.
But I did want to say that, you know, I think more important than the programming of a theater is the quality and consistency of the work that comes out of that theater. Any company can throw up Midsummer Night's Dream, but that doesn't mean it's going to be a good production of a Midsummer Night's Dream. And I believe to grow an audience, you've really got to focus on being consistent in the quality of work that you do.
Well, Anne Bogart, that's got to be a permanent problem where you are, and there's some pretty good actors up the street.
You're talking about New York City?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a paradox also there that actors from all over the country have to come to New York City to be considered a serious actor. So if you live in you're born in Seattle, you go to New York, and you're hired back to Seattle as a New York actor, that's the paradox of our time.
Sladen, what's your biggest problem there?
Right now is growing our audience. We just closed our first production ever last week and had a huge success. So it's trying to figure out how to capitalize on all the goodwill that came out of that to help us get our next show up.
And what was your first show?
It was a play called Recent Tragic Events by Craig Wright that originated at Woolly Mammoth in D.C.
And where are you going next?
We are looking at a play called Dreaming by Peter Barnes. He's a British playwright who died this last summer. It's a pretty ambitious project.
You have a fantastic season.
I was going to say, that sounds wonderful.
And what made you think about getting into this business in the first place?
A production of The Wind in the Willows at the National Theater about 12 years ago. I went to it, felt like a four-year-old kid, and loved that feeling and haven't been able to stop.
So you, at that moment, decided you need to form your own theater company.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, congratulations and good luck.
Thank you.
We're talking about the growth, development, and challenges facing regional theater in this country. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn at npr.org. We're speaking with NPR's art critic Bob Mondello and Ann Bogart, artistic director of the City Company in New York City. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And another caller is on the line, Andrew from San Francisco.
Yes, good morning. I'm also a member of a theater company board. In San Francisco, it's called Crowded Fire because everyone should have the right to cry theater in a crowded fire. I only do board work for them, but I think it really is possible to do very difficult art, really experimental art, and get a great audience. At least here in San Francisco, we've had just tremendous response. We just opened a show, a brand new show called One Big Lie by Liz Duffy Adams, with all new music and a tragic and comic story that was all entirely new and experimental. It can be done.
And Bogart, those must be warming words.
Oh, absolutely. No, I think an appetite for theater is the first part of the recipe for making theater that is contagious, that audiences want to come to, which means celebrating the theater for its theater language as opposed to, I think, what one does with film and television. In other words, I think a lot of people mistake the language of the box for the language of the stage, meaning the language of television. Mm-hmm. And they are completely different languages. The language of the stage is more poetic and metaphorical, whereas the language for film and television is for the most part literal.
That is exactly right. I think audiences really respond to theater that is much more experimental and much different from what they would read or see on television. They come to theater because they don't want to see television. They want to see something new and quite different.
Yeah, if I can share an old time, I took a cousin to a whole bunch of shows on Broadway way back when I was still a kid. And I insisted that he see all the new Neil Simon comedies because I thought he'd really have a great time at them. And that was what I thought he'd like because he was a little bit younger than I was. And I was dragging him to the stuff that seemed accessible and obvious and you know, easy. And none of it appealed to him at all. And then one time I had an extra ticket to Equus, which is much more complex and much more... it relies on your imagination in the theater, and back in the 1970s was really a sort of a shocker. And he just warmed to it so quickly because it was about using your intellect and the imagination that you bring to a stage that you don't have to bring to a movie. And it was magical.
You know, I see the theater as a gym for the soul. And you go, much like you go to the gym to work out for your body, you go to the theater or to the performing arts or to art in general to get a workout of your soul. And you need to be asked to participate. Mm-hmm. It's not about consuming. It's about taking everything that's made you who you are to this moment and using it to deal with something outside of yourself. And the theater is a glorious mechanism or machine for that.
Great way to describe it.
Yep.
I think audiences really appreciate it when you challenge them that way.
Andrew, thanks for the call. And let's see if we could squeeze one more caller in. Roland. Roland's in Palo Alto, California.
Yes, thanks, Neil. Wanted to just follow up on your first caller who mentioned some aspects of our Theater Works group here in Palo Alto. I think one of the most unique aspects and capabilities of regional theater is the ability to choose themes for a entire program year and themes which reflect issues in the local community. In fact, to hold up a mirror to the audience.
Bob, one of the stories in the series, the
yes,
two songs.
Actually, this week's story from Perseverance Stage in Alaska is about It's a story that was actually drawn from the community that is a musical that is about Filipino workers who came to Alaska to work in salmon canneries. And that is the kind of work that you cannot imagine coming from someplace else than Alaska, really. I mean, I think what we're capturing a little bit in this series is the breadth of experience and what a difference it makes to have regional voices coming into the theater world. You know, Beth Henley wrote a play way back when called Crimes of the Heart that she could never have gotten that produced on Broadway. It was the kind of thing that you send it to a regular producer and they'd say, no, it's not, it's too Southern, it's not going to... And, you know, it won a Pulitzer Prize and it became a huge hit. And those kinds of things just didn't happen before.
Another point we'll end on this. This is an email from Ken. Regional repertory theater also grows fantastic talent that becomes much adored. In the 69-70 season at the Theater of the Living Arts in Philadelphia, where I had the good fortune to work a couple of seasons, the company included a bunch of then unknowns, Morgan Freeman, Danny DeVito, and Sally Kirkland. Anne Bogart, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Anne Bogart is the artistic director of the City Company, a nonprofit ensemble theater company in the city of New York. And Bob Mondello is also with us, NPR's arts critic. Thanks very much.
It's always a pleasure.
Back after the break, you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.